Welcome, everyone. We are here live at ASN Kidney Week in Houston, and I'm excited today to do something I haven't gotten to do before. So today I will be talking to my co-host, Brendan Nguyen, who is presenting a very exciting late breaker here at Kidney Week on the SMART-C Consortium. So, Brendan, thanks for letting me interview you.
This is cool. This is the first time we've done this.
Right? I know.
Yeah.
This is cool. How does it feel being on that side?
Oh, it's good. And it's also good seeing you. You know, I was just saying we don't get to see each other enough face to face. So I'm super excited to be in your hometown.
Thank you.
Catching up in person, face to face, talking about SMART-C.
I know. This is great. We literally did our first Kidney Compass episode a year ago at ASN.
Yeah.
So now we're full circle. And yes, welcome to Houston. So let's start by spelling out, what is SMART-C? What does it stand for? There's a lot of people that may not have heard about SMART-C, and this is a pretty special project of yours that is a long time coming. So tell us about it.
Yeah, so SMART-C stands for the SGLT2 Inhibitor Meta-Analysis Cardiorenal Trialist Consortium. It is a global collaboration that brings together all of the trials and trialists that conducted the key SGLT2 inhibitor trials, evaluating effects on clinical outcomes with at least 500 participants in each arm and at least 6 months follow-up. And it is a collaboration between not only the trialists who conducted the trials, but also the industry partners who sponsored it. And it's co-chaired by me and Hido Hisping, who we've also had on the show previously.
Yeah.
And I think one of the important things to talk about is, why did we do it? And there are a couple of reasons for this. You know, for each individual trial, there is always residual uncertainty about the effects in specific patient populations or specific outcomes. For example, we may not have enough outcomes in any one trial to look at an outcome like atrial fibrillation or infection or something like that, or even kidney failure requiring dialysis or transplant. And by pooling the data, we're able to better understand the effects of this important drug class on a less common outcome for which no individual trial was powered. The other thing it does is it allows us to estimate with much greater precision what are the effects of this drug class in specific types of patients. And that's the kind of information that is important for guidelines in terms of providing robust and reliable information that then can then inform and strengthen guideline recommendations about the use of this agent. So it's about really providing the most definitive and reliable estimates of the effects of SGLT2 inhibitors in major patient groups.
Okay, this is fantastic. So can you tell us about what trials were included in this analysis? I think it was over 70,000 patients when you combine all of the different trials. So again, like you said, you're pulling from a very, very large and very diverse population. Tell us a little bit about what trials were included, and then what are some of the key findings about these patients that were included in terms of, you know, baseline characteristics and whatnot?
Yeah, so Shika, the analyses that we presented here at Kidney Week, there are two of them. They're both now published in JAMA. What they pulled upon was a group of 10 trials enrolling people with type 2 diabetes at risk of atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, people with heart failure with and without diabetes, with both reduced and preserved ejection fraction, and also patient populations with CKD, again, irrespective of diabetes status. SMART-C also includes post-MI trials, and I hope in the future trials in other populations, but those weren't included in this particular analysis. And what our overarching goal in these two publications were to look at the areas in which there was residual uncertainty about the effects of these drugs with respect to patients with CKD. So people with advanced CKD, stage 4 CKD, and those with little to no albuminuria, because we know that guidelines and often national formularies give varying recommendations and reimbursements on the use of SGLT2 inhibitors based on albuminuria. So our goal was to look at the kidney protective effects across the full spectrum of kidney function and albuminuria in one paper. And in the second paper that was led by Natalie Staplin, and listeners can go to the HCP website to view that, that was to look at not only kidney outcomes, but the whole range of efficacy outcomes, hospitalizations due to any cause, hospitalizations for heart failure, death due to cardiovascular disease, death due to other causes, in people with varying levels of albuminuria with and without diabetes.
So I think this is really important and something that nephrologists sometimes, you know, we're very focused on the kidney outcomes and we may forget that what really kills our patients is cardiovascular disease. So I think that's fantastic that you have looked at this both from more kidney-specific outcomes, and then you also have another analysis looking at all of these other outcomes that are really, really important for our patients. So tell us a little bit about, you know, the patients that have lower levels of albuminuria, because I think, you know, a lot of us are used to, you know, reducing, or we're trying to reduce albuminuria to as low as possible with RAS inhibitors, SGLT2 inhibitors now in diabetics. We also have GLP-1 receptor antagonists. We have finerenone. What should the goal be? And, you know, should we be trying to treat people who have, say, less than 30 milligrams per mole of, you know, albuminuria, which some people might feel, oh, that's not too high risk. And maybe our cardiology colleagues would beg to differ.
Yeah, so I think particularly in people with type 2 diabetes, even those who have lower levels of albuminuria, they still experience a considerable loss of, or at considerable risk of loss of kidney function. And in addition to that, they're also at high risk of other complications that you mentioned, hospitalizations, heart failure, cardiovascular death. And so what we did was we looked at the effect of SGLT2 inhibitors by baseline albuminuria levels. And what we found was for the kidney outcome, which was a harmonized composite outcome of 50% decline in GFR, kidney failure, or death due to kidney disease, absolutely no evidence whatsoever that the kidney protective effects of SGLT2 inhibitors varied by baseline albuminuria, with clear and separate benefit even in people with normal albuminuria. The question has always been about in people with non-diabetic CKD without albuminuria. And even when we pool all of the 10 trials that we have included and looked at the non-diabetic patients without albuminuria, there are very few clinical events. But what gives us more power to look at this is, of course, GFR slope, which we've talked about previously as well. And that gives us considerable statistical power to look at effects on kidney disease progression in non-diabetic patients without albuminuria. And what we can see is in the non-diabetic patients, a halving of the rate of GFR decline, which is consistent across all levels of GFR, across all levels of albuminuria, and similarly in patients with and without diabetes. And what this suggests is that current guidelines that stratify recommendations based on albuminuria should be, or arguably should be, simplified to enable more widespread implementation of these drugs. Now, the other factor to also mention is that in addition to the kidney benefits, as we've talked about, the effects on hospitalizations due to any cause, heart failure hospitalizations, and mortality effects are also consistent irrespective of albuminuria, including in people with non-diabetic kidney disease. So between these two companion papers, we've got compelling evidence that the benefits clearly outweigh the harms, and there are clear kidney benefits even in normal albuminuric patients.
This is fantastic. I think this really puts to rest that question of, you know, patients who maybe have CKD stage 3 or even, you know, CKD stage 2 and have no albuminuria, shouldn't we use SGLT2 inhibitors? And I think this is obviously very compelling data. Can you speak to what the baseline GFR range was in this study? Because you pooled 10 different trials. And I think the other thing that sometimes people argue is, oh, these patients, their GFR is too low to start or it's too high and there's, you know, this people wonder, is it really worth it to put someone on an SGLT2 inhibitor if their GFR is already too far gone or, you know, very preserved? What are your thoughts there and what did your study show?
Yeah, so we included people across the trials, included the full spectrum of GFR, including several thousand individuals with GFR less than 30 who we know from real-world data are undertreated despite being at very, very high risk of kidney failure, amongst the highest that are treated by nephrologists. And even in those patients with stage 4 CKD, we see clear benefits in reducing the risk of kidney failure. We see benefits on cardiovascular outcomes and mortality outcomes. And so I think one of the important pieces from an implementation perspective is how do we increase the uptake in those at highest risk at stage 4 GFR and below? Certainly these data provide compelling evidence to support the uptake or accelerate the uptake in that population. The other question, which is difficult to answer, is people with a GFR less than 20. And we even attempted to look at that, but because of the inclusion criteria of the trials, there are only several hundred patients and probably too few to give a reliable estimate of the treatment effect, underscoring the need for additional trials in patients with a GFR less than 20, like renal life cycles, which is ongoing at the moment. The other point I think we should talk about is the economic argument and the cost-effectiveness argument, because in part I think that has played into how guidelines think about how these drugs should be used. But we know that SGLT2 inhibitors in many countries around the world are already generic, and if they're not already generic, they will be in the next couple of years. So the whole economic dimension to this argument is going to change very rapidly. And people with CKD with lower levels of albuminuria from a population perspective are 5.5 times or more common than people with high levels of albuminuria. And so if you're thinking from a public health perspective, treating these individuals could result in considerably greater public health and economic benefits with full implementation. And I think this is why these data are so important.
Yeah, it sounds like this is what we needed, as you mentioned, to kind of drive change in guidelines. And I think that hopefully will affect accessibility around the world, and people will become, you know, more comfortable. I think they're already more comfortable now than they were several years ago using SGLT2 inhibitors. But there's those certain populations, like you mentioned, that people weren't so sure, is it worth it? And I think now it's very clear that it is certainly worth it. And, you know, we all know the cost of dialysis and transplantation, not to mention the, you know, hours of quality of life that, you know, patients are losing when they're hooked up to a machine, and the risks that come with being on immunosuppression for transplant. So this certainly seems worth, you know, taking a pill earlier in your course, even if you are at CKD4, when you start the SGLT2 inhibitor, to buy yourself more time.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think this is the right time for these data. As the drugs become generic, as people become more familiar with using them, we can now address those remaining areas of residual uncertainty through initiatives like SmartC. And the other thing, we've talked about this before, and some of our guests have, that this kind of work is only possible through data sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been very lucky to work with very collaborative trial sponsors and trialists who are willing to share data. And the more that we're able to do that through initiatives like SmartC, we can really, that's how we maximize the societal benefits of the data, which really this is a culmination of 20 years of work in the field and many people who have contributed to this. This is how we kind of maximize the evidence generation from trial data, and I think is a really good template for what we could achieve with other drug classes too.
Yes, I could not agree with you more. This is an area that really, I think, pulls at my heartstrings, because I think that, you know, especially in the glomerular disease space that I am very involved in, we have many, many fewer patients. And there is such a need to share data. And it is amazing the things that we can learn and the good we can do when people come together and allow, you know, pooling of data and answering these really important questions. So, kudos to you and the entire SMART team for, you know, bringing this together. And I know it's been a lot of work very, very worth it. And I think, you know, plug to our listeners that are, you know, involved in trials to share your data. So with that, Brendan, anything else, final words you wanted to add?
No, I think the key message now is implementation of SGLT2 inhibitors, irrespective of albuminuria, and that the benefits clearly outweigh any potential harms in people with and without diabetes and across different levels of GFR and albuminuria.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you all for tuning in to Kidney Compass, and be sure to follow along on Spotify, Apple, or HCP Live. Thanks. Bye.